Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:23 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 16th. Netflix has just come out with their results, so they haven't been reflected in the price because it came out after the close, but it's down 3.5%. So that's at least another relook at the lower side of the range and potentially even a breakdown tomorrow. This is another example of the fact that this earnings season has been a bit spotty. L'Oreal came out today with outsized gains that, for the first time, China has become its biggest market, overtaking the European markets. That's a clear growth trajectory for the cosmetics sector, and it's also reflective of the fact that we have this continued growth in the demand from the global consumer. This is very much tied to demographics and economic growth. And China's growth and the fiscal stimulus that is currently underway was also a significant factor in the A-share market doing rather well today. But then when we look across at Netflix, Netflix needs to continue to grow its subscriber base. And that's a challenge because the number of people that can consume its products is rather limited to English speakers. They've already got the majority of the English-speaking world. Their big growth market is India, but India will need to well, Netflix will need to provide India-focused programming for the Indian market, as well as dropping prices, and subscriptions need to continue to grow in an aggressive manner in order to fund that. And that's an awfully big ask. This is exactly the same kind of problem, for example, that Whole Foods had. Whole Foods was a US business. It had done fantastically well. Then it borrowed a pile of money to go off and expand internationally, only to find that paying exorbitant rents for and charging extraordinary sums for produce that could be sourced locally was not a winning strategy on the international front. So they've eventually been taken over by Amazon. That's, I think, one of the parallels that we have with Netflix. It's a real challenge, and I think there's a real possibility that we're going to see much more volatility in the share. Meanwhile, when we look at some of the rest of the technology sector, there was an interesting snippet that came out today, and it was with regard to Google. They have just released the Waymo app on Google Play. So that is the beginning of rolling out the autonomous driving portion of its business, and I really don't think that that's in the price at all. When we look at the share, it's certainly been in a volatile range over the course of the last 18 months, but the fact is that it is coming back up towards the peak. It has rebounded impressively from the $1,000 level, and as long as it's holding that $1,000 level, we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Then let's take a look at L'Oreal, because it's representative of a substantial number of the shares that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer, and it is currently overextended relative to the trend mean. The last time it had a similar overextension, which was back at the beginning of 2015, then it did return to the mean. It was exactly the same thing at the beginning of 2018. I think it's going to be quite similar on this occasion. But there is obviously a clear growth trajectory. When we look at, for example, Procter and Gamble, well, it's a very similar chart. And the share has been doing really incredibly well since the beginning of 2018. It's also becoming increasingly overextended, but it has broken up and away from what was effectively a 4-year range. So there is potentially additional space here for outperformance, particularly when it had bounced so well and then consolidated in the region of the peak around the $90 area. But it is overextended, there's no question about that. Well, one of the reasons why these shares are doing well is because the growth of the global consumer is starting to attract investor interest again. Then, of course, we'd had the contraction in bond yields, which removed competition. And the one, I think, more important characteristic is not simply that these are growth stocks against a background of a large number of people that are entering the middle class and the upper middle class, but also they have very predictable cash flows, and that therefore they have bond-like characteristics. With the contraction in yields seen over the last 6 months, that has been a clear incentive to buy these kinds of shares. And now we've had the yield starting to pop on the upside, and it is now approaching the lower side of that overhead trading range. It's unwound about half of its overextension relative to the trend mean. And the higher the yield goes, the greater the potential is that we're going to see some pause and consolidation in those trends that are really quite overextended. But we would really need to see a very substantial move in the yield in order to question the consistency of these uptrends. So, what that I think is a recipe for is some ebb and flow in the consistency of the trends, which is in fact exactly what we've had over the course of the last decade. When bond yields start to be a bit more competitive, then investors tend to favor bonds over the dividend aristocrat or autonomy type companies, and vice versa. Now, when we look at what exactly is going on in China, this pause that we've seen over the course of the last week really doesn't look like anything other than that. And the market has now put in two relatively similar sized ranges. In fact, the one in March was a little bit wider than the one we saw in here today, but this was a really impressive rebound that we saw in here today. And this suggests that we are still in a trending environment. When we look at the H share index, then it is also pushing up and through the most recent short-term range, and there is potential here for additional upside in here tomorrow. When we look at what's going on in India, the polls are suggesting that the BJP is going to win this election, and polls aren't particularly or I guess they're not the most reliable in India or indeed anywhere else these days, but they are something on which to base a bullish prognostication, and the Indian market now is pushing on to new high ground. So that's beginning to price in a positive result to the election, and we were not going to have that election result until the end of May. What I thought was also particularly interesting in here today is that Tata Motors has broken its downtrend. And that had been an incredible decline that we saw all the way through 2018. It put in a little base over about 6 months, and now it is breaking up and through the 200-day moving average. There is the twinning of two stories here, because the Waymo has ordered a significant number of Jaguar X types for its autonomous vehicles. If they're moving towards commercialization, then that's going to be a source of demand for vehicles from both Tata Motors and Chrysler. And when we think about the Italian market, well, it's obviously going to need sources of additional demand growth. And the share is now coming back up towards the region of the trend mean. The two sources potentially of demand growth for automobiles are China, but demand in China has been moderating, not because of any less enthusiasm among investors, but perhaps it's more to do with the fact that an increasingly large number of cities have been curtailing the number of cars that are allowed to be on the roads, and that is very much a manufactured slowdown in auto demand. The big challenge, of course, for auto manufacturers is at the retooling that they are increasingly having to bring out electric-only models. And that represents a significant challenge. But what we are starting to see is that an increasing number of them are coming back up towards their progressions of lower rally highs and starting to break higher, which would suggest that a good part of that is already in the price. Then there's an additional, I think, interesting story that was out in here today, and it relates to cybersecurity. One of the reasons why we haven't had a rollicking bull market in these cybersecurity shares is because, despite the fact that it's practically every week that we hear some company has been hacked, or there's been a ransomware attack, or there's been some industrial espionage, or state-sponsored cyber war, the shares have been doing modestly well, but they haven't been really lighting the world on fire. And one of the reasons for that is because it is cheaper for companies to buy insurance than it is to invest in in I guess vigilance and securing their networks. But that was on the assumption that if they were hacked, that they would get paid by the insurance companies, and the insurance companies are using the defense that it's a war and that they don't pay out on wars. So that's a very significant development. If the court finds in favor of the insurance companies, then demand for cyber insurance products is going to evaporate, but that means it's going to create a source of demand if companies are going to have to defend their own networks, because at the moment they are investing very little in attempting to defend their networks because it just is not cost effective. It's also potentially really quite beneficial to consumers, considering that so much of our data is already out there on the public networks. But the hacking, or the cybersecurity hack ETF, has now broken upwards to new recovery highs. When we look at companies in the sector, Check Point Software has also broken up and out of a more than year-long range. Palo Alto Networks has also continued to be a significant leader in here. Cisco Systems is more often considered an infrastructure company, but they bought BroadSoft and adopted a subscription business model, and the share is now accelerating here. It's done phenomenally well since the beginning of this year. It's racing back towards the peaks put in back in 2000. There's definitely an uptick in the pace of the advance over the course of the last year, and it is overextended in the short term, so we certainly can't rule out the potential for some consolidation. But this looks very much like a bull market environment. So when we start to look at what exactly is going on here in terms of the stock market, there's an increasing number of these stories that are supportive of the view that we could have an upward break. I rather think that the more likely scenario is that we're going to get some consolidation first, and then we potentially get an upward break, because we do have short-term overbought conditions, and that's, I think, that just seems to be the most likely outcome as the major indices come right back up towards the upper side of their respective ranges. On the other hand, the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index was up in a really dynamic manner in here today, and that was being led higher by Qualcomm, which was up about 13%. This is a very emphatic breakout, and it is a real slapdown in terms of the failed downside break below 1200. This really did look like a completing top formation, and it has been completely countermanded. The break above 1400 points would need to fail in a very dynamic manner in order to really question that this isn't still a bull market environment. And semiconductors are generally leaders in the stock market, so that is also supportive of the view that the market will eventually break upwards, but I do contend that we are due some consolidation. And the NASDAQ is also now really within a striking distance of its peaks from back in September and October. And it's really only 45 points away from that level. So there is a scope here also for an upward break, but probably not before we get some consolidation. And again, this has been another market that has just soared since the beginning of this year. Qualcomm has popped right up from the lower side of its range. The reason for the big move today was because they settled, or well, Apple settled their case with Qualcomm, and that has resulted in a very significant move. Now, this has been an incredibly choppy environment over the course of the last 3 years. I think it's rather important to look at more history, because when we just pull this back a bit, well, we can see, for example, that the $80 area was pretty much in the peak region from the year 1999. And this very choppy environment has been really characterized by the ebb and flow of the litigation process that has been going onwards. Qualcomm is the owner of a substantial number of patents, and it's the expense of trying to enforce those patents has been one of the factors in holding back the share. But the other point is that throughout this process, they have been raising their dividend, and that dividend growth rate is currently around 8%, and the dividend yield is about 3.5%. And 3.5% is something of it's something that I've referred to as a bit of a magic number. And we can see, for example, that the yield was actually closer to 5% at just the beginning of this year. And now it is contracting again. Well, there is the potential that if this rally persists, then we're going to start to see Qualcomm regarded as another one of these types of bond proxies. It's very common for investors to look on the luxury goods or the consumer staples or even consumer discretionary type companies as a bond proxy, but they don't tend to look at technology companies in the same way. And I do think that that's likely to change. Then, of course, the other company that people tend to look on as a bond proxy is Visa. And that's another company that has been able to break on the upside here. And they have been one of the most impressive returners of value to shareholders with dividend growth rates that are really world-beating. And the very fact that the yield is so low is just a testament to how quickly the price has been rising, considering that the dividend growth rate is really world-beating. So we can see that there are an increasing number of large globally oriented businesses among the autonomies that are breaking on the upside, and that's really quite positive. So what it suggests is that this range is going to be resolved on the upside, and that we are potentially going to get another leg here. Then people are going to be paying particular attention to the yield curve spread, and it's still around 17 basis points. So it has not yet inverted, and even when it does invert, then we have anything from a 6 to an 18-month window before we get a recession. So even when it becomes inverted, there's generally a good strong rally that we get. We're starting to see that cyclical shares are starting to perform, and usually they peak after the wider market. So that's, I think, one of the more important characteristics. When we look at the FTSE 350 mining sector, it was in positive territory again in here today, but the most important thing it's done has been to clear this 20,000 level for the first time really since 2012. And as long as it's holding that level, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the recovery scenario. So that should be beneficial to resources sectors all over the world, with China's fiscal impetus really starting to pick up pace. then that is acting as a tailwind for the resources sector. It's acting as a tailwind for just about anything that's leveraged to global growth. And that also includes Germany and Europe generally. So the DAX index now was up in additional positive territory today. It is back above the 12,000 level. It's being led higher by the mid caps, and that is continuing to push through the 25,000 level. When we look at the FTSE 100 index, for example, we're given a pretty similar situation. This is an index of big globally oriented companies, and they are starting to push back up and towards the peak again. Then when we look at the FTSE 250, which is classically thought of as a domestic market, well, it is now coming back up towards the 20,000 level. So this is another example of a deep overextension on the downside being resulting in a reversion, then a pop back on the upside. So that's the broad consistency of this trend. In other words, we're going to have to see a very substantial decline and then a failure in the region of the trend mean in order to really question the consistency of this advance overall. When we look at it on a much longer term basis, then we can see that the mid caps in the UK have outperformed the wider market by a substantial margin for pretty much their entire history. And that is, I think, a very significant factor. So, what are the risks? Well, obviously, the risks are that the market has been so busy pricing in a benign attitude that it goes over the top and that we do move into a bubbly kind of characteristic. I don't think that's evident just yet. Then, of course, there is the potential that yields do not stop here in the region of the trend mean. And I think that's also a that could potentially be a fly in the ointment for this advance, that we could certainly have people starting to get a little bit antsy again about higher yields if the US 10-year Treasury yield pushes back above its trend mean. One thing that I think is also interesting is that because the stock market has been doing so well, people have been a little bit less enthused about the gold market. It came right down to test the lower side of its range in here today. It was down over $10. It's going to have to rally soon if it's going to demonstrate support in the region of the trend mean and avoid a further deterioration. If it fails in this area, then there is a significant potential that it could go back and test the lower side of the range. Its ability to find support and do so in a relatively timely manner would certainly help to bolster the bullish outlook. And oil prices were in positive territory in here today, but not in an especially dynamic manner. This is still very much a tight range, and there's been a distinct absence of volatility in the oil market over the course of the last few months. This is not characteristic. We often see in terms of the oil market that it goes through periods of less consistent and more volatility, and then it has these periods where it does trend in a very consistent rhythmic market, which eventually end and give way to the next significant bout of volatility. The higher the price goes, the more time it spends in these higher levels, the greater the likelihood is that more supply is going to be brought into the market. But as long as we're in a backwardation, then that is going to limit the amount of additional new supply brought to market, because prices are going to have to get up to the $80 area and then hold it in order to really encourage new supply to come to market. It's when you have a contango and the forward price is significantly above the spot that producers can hedge way out. And then they have both the financing and the security to really start to pump. And that's just not there at the moment. That is one of the most clearly fundamental bullish views for the market right now, because we have this backwardation that prices can continue to grind higher. But that's only within the context of a ranging environment. When we look at the longer term for the oil price, then we're in a long range. And that range is somewhere between about $40 and $80. So we're coming back up towards the upper side of that range. We know that there is a lot of additional supply becomes economic above $80. And that is going to be a significant Rubicon to be able to for oil prices to be able to surmount on more than a short-term basis. And then, of course, we have the dollar. Well, against the euro, it was a little stronger in here today, and the euro is beginning to experience resistance in the region of the 113 area. Then, when we look at the performance of the yen, oops, I didn't type that effectively. Then we can see that the dollar is back around this 112 area. This has been an area of resistance for it over the course of the last few months. If it can push up and through this level, well, then that's going to be beneficial for the nominal prices of the major Japanese stock markets. The second section index is pausing here in the region of the trend mean. It really does need to get back above the 7,000 level in order to really signal a return to demand dominance. And so far, it hasn't quite been able to do that. If we get a weaker yen, then that would certainly be beneficial. I think when we look around the world, there is the clear potential that we're going to get some kind of reflation trade. The market is busy pricing in the potential that we're going to get a resolution to the trade war. That is one of the reasons why China started to do so much better. It's not just because of their fiscal stimulus. The fiscal stimulus, though, is a concrete development. The potential for the trade war to end is a supposition, which has also already been priced in. I think that we are likely to get some consolidation once it is announced, because there has been so much good news already priced in as a result of that it would be very hard to beat what has already been assumed. But if we do get a global reflationary environment, which does look likely, then we are likely to get an additional move on the upside that will eventually climax in an inverted yield curve, and then we will get the kinds of developments that everyone was pricing in fear at the end of 2018. But the yield curve has not yet inverted, and I think that's one of the more important points. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.